I confess, I confess the anger living in me. The rage inside my bones has overcome.
IVF pro-life. Now, You've probably seen a lot in the news lately about in vitro fertilization, or IVF. IVF is a procedure by which babies are produced by combining the sperm from a man and an egg from a woman, but instead of happening within a woman's body, as in normal sexual intercourse, this combination happens in a laboratory. The fertilized egg is then implanted back into a woman so that hopefully it will grow into a healthy baby. And on the face of it, what's wrong with that? It sounds pretty great. After all, who wouldn't want more children in the world? We Catholics are emphatically pro-life, so why wouldn't we want to help people have more children, especially infertile couples who have troubles getting pregnant through the conventional method? However, there are a host of problems with IVF. We're going to get to some of them here in this webinar, which have led many pro-life people, including all Catholics, to say no to the practice of IVF. And in this webinar, we'll discover why. Now, the Catholic Church, as you know, has many difficult teachings, teachings that are unpopular, teachings that are hard for people to understand, much less accept and live out. The church says no to things like artificial contraception, abortion, women priests, same-sex marriage, and a host of other hot-button issues. However, in my experience, IVF may be the hardest church teaching for people to grasp, both beyond the church, but also within the church, among Catholics. Now, I don't mean it's necessarily the hardest to obey. What I mean is that this teaching on IVF is the hardest for most people to understand. They just don't get why the church would be against something so seemingly wonderful as IVF. So let's dig into why. And we'll begin here with the basics so that you really understand what IVF is and why it's problematic. So IVF, or again, in vitro fertilization, is a process by which eggs from a woman are fertilized with sperm from a man in a laboratory. Now, the name in vitro is just a Latin phrase for within the glass. It's referring to the glass test tube in which the fertilization of the egg occurs. So conception occurs within the glass rather than within a woman's body. So that's what that's where we get the phrase in vitro from. Instead of the reproductive process playing out naturally through a man and a woman having sexual intercourse, the sperm and the egg are brought together in a laboratory by a technician. But what happens then? Well, that fertilized egg grows in the laboratory for about a week. It becomes an embryo, and then it's eventually transferred back into the woman's uterus, often, and in fact, almost all cases, alongside other embryos. So in IVF, it's not usually one embryo created and planted within a woman. Usually there are several embryos implanted in the woman, and hopefully one of those embryos at least becomes viable and the pregnancy moves forward, resulting in a healthy born child. Now, let's talk for a second about the egg and the sperm that are used in this process. In many cases, in vitro fertilization is pursued by an infertile married couple. So the sperm comes from the husband and the egg comes from the wife, with the embryo being placed back into the wife's womb. So you're only involving the husband and the wife. The lab technician is combining the gametes, but then they're being implanted back into the woman. But this isn't always what happens. In many other cases, the sperm comes from a third party, sometimes even anonymously from a sperm bank, or the egg might come from an anonymous egg donor. In other cases, once the egg is fertilized, instead of being placed back into the uterus of the child's mother, it might be implanted into the uterus of another person, a surrogate mother, who is then paid to carry the baby to full term to give birth, and then to turn the baby over to its new parents. Now, how prevalent is this? Well, it's estimated that around 70,000 new children are born each year in the United States through IVF. 70,000. Pause and let that number sink in. 70,000 new children every year are born through IVF, and that number, as we know, is only increasing. Many of those children were born to couples who struggled with infertility. Others were born to same-sex couples or single people who could never conceive a child and who used IVF to produce children that nature wouldn't give them. Now, as you know, if you've been following the news, in almost every case, IVF is applauded and celebrated by the media and the popular culture. You'll find very few people expressing reservations about IVF in any of these scenarios. That's why this is such a difficult teaching to understand. It seems the whole world is in agreement that IVF is a good thing. And so when it comes to the church's rejection of IVF, the church is in the extreme minority. The church is slammed for being both anti-life and anti-science, anti-technology. So why does the church still say IVF is wrong, even against immense pressure to support it? Well, let's turn to the heart of the issue, why IVF is wrong. Many couples see IVF as a gift from God. They say it's a way to bring more children into the world, and that's undeniably a good thing. But here are five major reasons why IVF is wrong. Number one, IVF is wrong because it undermines the purpose of sex. Sex has two fundamental purposes, unity and procreation. The purpose of the conjugal act, the sexual coming together of the husband and wife, is unity. So it's to bond them together, body and soul, in the deepest possible way. But it's also procreation. It's also meant to lead to reproduction, to produce new life. That's the procreative dimension. Now, of course, not every instance of sex will result in a baby, but every sexual encounter must be open to life. This is why contraception is wrong. Contraception rips apart the unitive and the procreative dimensions of sex. IVF does the same thing, but in a mirror image. Contraception wants sex without babies. IVF wants babies without sex. So IVF is kind of the reverse side, the other side of the coin of contraception. Both contraception and IVF undermine the human purpose of sex because they force us to act against our human nature. In other words, when we use contraception or when we use IVF, we become less than we were created to be, less authentically human. So that's a philosophical, ethical objection to IVF. Here's a second reason why IVF is wrong. Every child deserves to be conceived through an act of love. Every child deserves to come into existence through the love that exists between a child's mother and father. A child should not be manufactured. A child should not be created in a cold, sterile human laboratory. Nor should a child be the result of a financial transaction among any combination of men and women and lab technicians and sperm donors, egg donors, surrogate mothers. Children are not products to be bought, sold, engineered, or created in a lab. They are not commodities. They're people. They're human persons. Here's a third reason IVF is wrong. Nobody has a right to a child. Now, I know this one can be hard to stomach for a lot of us. We live in a culture that emphasizes rights. Many people have extended those rights to children, to having children, claiming that every person, even if they're single, has a right to have a child. But this is not true. We do have a natural and God-given right to many things, but having a child is not one of them. Why? Because children are gifts. They're not rights. They're not things owed to us. They're gifts that we receive, not rights that we claim. Here's how the Catechism of the Catholic Church puts it beautifully in paragraph 2378. It's on the screen here, but I'll also read it. The Catechism says, "A child is not something owed to one, but is a gift. The supreme gift of marriage is a human person. A child may not be considered a piece of property, an idea to which an alleged right to a child would lead. In this area, only the child possesses genuine rights. the right to be the fruit of the specific act of the conjugal love of his parents, and the right to be respected as a person from the moment of his conception. So yes, men and women have the right to marry each other, the right to love each other. They have the right to try to have a child, but they do not have the right to children themselves. Here's a fourth reason IVF is wrong. Now we're getting deeper into the moral and practical objections. IVF requires killing extra embryos or putting them into storage. Now, this is the first time we're mentioning this, but I want to clarify how the IVF process works. During IVF, a lab technician does not just take one sperm and one egg and combine them to make one single embryo. In almost all cases, dozens of embryos are created through dozens of combinations of sperm and eggs. And remember, as we know through our pro-life philosophy, embryos are just human children at an early stage. So each embryo is a distinct human person. Each embryo has its own distinct DNA, different from the other embryos, different from its mother and father. So what happens to all these extra embryos, all these extra children? Well, some of them are implanted back into the woman through the process of IVF, and the woman hopes to carry them through pregnancy and give birth to at least one healthy child. But what about all the embryos that were not implanted back into the woman? Well, statistics show that almost half of the embryos created during IVF are discarded during or after the process. Discarded is just a euphemistic way of saying they're destroyed. These small, innocent living embryos, these developing humans that are alive, are killed. Other embryos produced through IVF are used in scientific experiments, which is pretty chilling to think about. Little humans are created in laboratories so that they can be experimented upon. A related problem is that many of the embryos that are not used during the IVF process are frozen and put into storage just in case women want to implant more children into their bodies later in life. So a man and a woman have their sperm and their eggs combined to make a bunch of embryos. They implant some of them, but they want to save the rest in case down the line, once I'm past even the age of childbearing, I can still take some of those embryos and re-implant them into my bodies and have more children. Now, this is, of course, slightly better than just killing the embryos, discarding them, but not much better, because the reality is we now have in America millions of embryos, again, real human children, that are sitting in freezers across the country, presenting a serious moral dilemma. What should we do with them? Catholic theologians have been wrestling with this problem, and there just doesn't seem to be a good solution. Some theologians suggest it's morally permissible to take some of those embryos and implant them in any women who are willing to receive them, even if those women are not the mothers of the children, just to give the embryos a chance to develop and be born. Others suggest that we just need to keep them frozen indefinitely, that implanting them in a woman is immoral, and so that's not a live option. So the only live option is to just keep them alive in a freezer indefinitely. But again, there's no real good solution to this really serious and growing problem. All right, let's turn now to a fifth and final reason why IVF is wrong: the unintended consequences. Now, again, most people pursuing IVF have good motivations. They just want to have children. They want more children in the world. And again, children are gifts. So the problem is not with the goal of having more children. The problem is the means by which we're attaining that goal. And again, the unintended consequences that result from those means. Now, we don't have time to go through all of the unintended consequences, but let me mention some. First of all, IVF has already led to things like cloning, eugenics, and designer babies, where human life has been turned into a commodity, like choosing your favorite car or purse. Children now are created, bought, sold, or killed depending on whether their qualities are preferred, whether they have the right genetics, whether they have the right hair color or eye color or abilities. This is dangerous and this is evil. Second, IVF has contributed to a huge increase in children who are born without a committed mother and father. We know that wherever possible, all children deserve to be raised by their mother and father in a loving marriage. Now, that's not always possible. There's always situations where maybe one of the parents passes away, or there's a dysfunctional situation at home where it's just not feasible for the child to be raised by their mother and father. But with IVF, IVF is intentionally following this path from the beginning. There are no exceptions to this. IVF opens the door to children being claimed by single parents, same-sex couples, even non-married friends. IVF might fulfill the desire for adults to have children, but it's the children who suffer the lifelong consequences. By being intentionally deprived of their mother or father, or both parents, they're losing on what's best for the child. So those are five reasons why IVF is wrong. Again, it's easy to see why people think IVF is good, mainly because it tends to result in a good outcome, the birth of a wonderful child. But it's harder for people to clearly grasp why there are so many problems with IVF, from moral problems to practical problems to societal problems. IVF is wrong and bad. It's wrong because it's immoral, but it's bad because it will lead to terrible outcomes for children and society. Okay, but I know you're probably wondering, what about people I know who have already pursued IVF? The ship has already sailed. How do I talk to friends and family who have already chosen to conceive children through IVF? In other words, how do we stand against IVF and stand for life, but also speak compassionately to family members and friends who have been directly affected by IVF? These include parents who have used IVF to conceive their own children, as well as people who themselves have been conceived through IVF. It's one thing to say IVF is wrong in the abstract, but how do we convey that fact gently and respectfully to someone who has personally benefited through IVF? Well, let's break these into a couple different types of conversations. So first, we have couples who are thinking about using IVF. Second, we have couples who have already used IVF. And third, we have people who have been conceived through IVF, who wouldn't exist without IVF. So first, how should we speak with couples who are struggling with infertility and thinking about using IVF? Well, your first move should always be to listen and respond with compassion. That's a given. Infertility is a tremendous hardship and sorrow. It's a difficult cross to bear. So listen to their pain and their difficulty. Affirm and share their longings. Be compassionate. That's always the first step. You want to avoid flippant answers, and you want to avoid saying something like, well, okay, you're infertile. Have you thought about adoption? That will just come across as cold and uncaring. Chances are they have considered adoption, but discerned that it wasn't right for them. But next, after listening with compassion, pray for an opportunity to speak about alternatives to IVF, and there are several. Now, this has to happen naturally in the conversation, so don't force it, but when an opportune moment arises, you might say something like, hey, listen, I know the doctors have said that you are infertile, but I've read articles and have seen other couples who have also been told they were infertile, but then when they get a second opinion from a doctor who specializes in natural solutions to infertility, they actually discover a way to solve the underlying problem. It's happened for a lot of couples who are then able to conceive. Would you be open to learning a little bit more about that? So you see, what you want to try and do is drive the conversation toward alternatives to IVF. Now, probably the best alternative is something called NAPRO technology. NAPRO technology simply stands for natural procreative technology. This is a field of science which focuses on women's health and encompasses new medical and surgical techniques. It was actually pioneered by a number of Catholic scientists, and it's been very successful in treating a host of issues, including infertility, endometriosis, repetitive miscarriages, and many more. The great part is that it's a completely moral and licit way of responding to infertility because it gets to the root causes of infertility and then works with the natural functions of the woman's body, not against them, in order to resolve those issues. Now, we don't have time to go into all the ins and outs of NAPRO technology. I encourage you to go on Google and read a few articles about it. But if you have a loved one struggling with infertility, look it up, do a little research, and perhaps share that info with them. What NAPRO scientists have learned over the years is that it turns out very few people have physical conditions that make it impossible to have a child. In many cases, women are just diagnosed as infertile. They're sent to the nearest IVF clinic to conceive, and the doctors spend very little time getting to the root cause of why the woman is infertile in the first place and how we can perhaps solve that issue and allow them to conceive naturally. Now, that's not to say NAPRO will solve every instance of infertility, but they have had tremendous success, and it is a much better option than IVF. Another alternative to explore with someone considering IVF is adoption. Now, as I said earlier, you don't want to suggest this right off the bat as if it's something the other person has never considered. But if the conversation develops enough, and if there's a deep bond of trust between you and the other person, you might ask at some point if they've considered adopting a child, if they've given it any thought. It's the perfect way to connect their deep longing to have a child with the children's great need for parents to raise them. There are over 100,000 children right now waiting to be adopted in America. So that should at least always be an option that infertile couples consider or discern. Finally, if it's a close friend or close family member and you have a deep shared level of trust with them, then you might take a step even further and affirm a very hard truth to them that sometimes infertility is a problem that can't adequately be solved. Even the best healthcare will not always heal infertility. So for some couples, infertility is simply a cross. It's a cross that Christ wants them to bear. Now, many couples experiencing infertility have welcomed that cross and have turned that heartbreak into tremendous goods, such as adoption or foster parenting or dedicated work in schools or ministries or missions. For them, the question turns from why am I infertile to what can I do despite my infertility? How am I going to take this cross that the Lord has given me and use it for good? Infertility is a cross, to be sure, but even the cross can be transformed into glory. Okay. That's all well and good, but what about this second group of people, couples who have already conceived through IVF? How can we speak to them? Well, with these couples, you want to be very clear about two things. First, using IVF was wrong, but second, the child they conceived through IVF is good, a tremendous gift from God. Both of those things are simultaneously true. You can emphasize that even though using IVF was wrong, there's nothing wrong with the child. The child has no less dignity than any other child. Now, you can also clarify that when you say IVF is wrong, you don't mean I wish that child never existed. Again, all children are gifts from God from the moment of their existence. And from that very first moment when they came into being, they're welcomed joyfully. And you would never wish them out of existence. But that said, the ends don't always justify the means. Just because something good resulted from IVF, that doesn't mean that IVF itself was good. Choosing IVF was still wrong, and the couple needs to ask God's forgiveness for that misguided choice. if they're Catholic, they need to go to the sacrament of confession and be healed of that choice and find forgiveness. But that has nothing to do with the goodness of the child who resulted from that poor choice. The child is always unquestionably good, a true gift. But let's look at one more scenario. How should we speak with people who themselves were conceived with IVF? Now, in my experience, this can perhaps be the most difficult situation. In these conversations, I recommend a similar approach to talking with parents who have used IVF. You want to emphasize that your objections to IVF have nothing to do with the value of their existence. In fact, you can clarify that by saying IVF is wrong, I'm not saying I don't wish you exist. I'm happy you exist. Look, I'm grateful that God took a bad action like IVF and nevertheless used it to produce something so wonderful as you. So praise God for bringing you into this world. Again, the goal is to separate the action from the result of that action. The action, IVF, was bad, even though the result, the other person's existence, was good. Okay, as we wind here to a close, I want to next share with you four big objections that you're very likely going to hear from those who support IVF. The reason I want to share these with you is because if we look at these objections now and we understand how to reply to them, then whenever you encounter them from friends or family members or strangers, you won't be rattled. You'll be confident. You'll know exactly what to say. You'll think, oh yeah, I've heard that objection before and I know exactly what to say to it. So let's look at these four objections. Here's the first one. If you're truly pro-life, why wouldn't you support couples having more children? Aren't children good? All right. Well, this is a tough objection because it pulls on our heartstrings and it leans on our strong pro-life sentiments. But the answer is that the ends don't justify the means. Or to say it another way, just because an action results in something good or because it has a good consequence, that doesn't mean the behavior that produced that consequence was good. So you might say, yes, I am pro-life. I do think all life is valuable, including the lives of children conceived through IVF. I think we should have more babies, more children. But that doesn't mean that I think every way of creating children is good. After all, there are certainly ways of children that we both would agree are not good. Things like rape or incest or unconsensual sex of any form. We agree that even if those resulted in children and the children are good, the ways that produce those children are not good. All children deserve to be created through an act of love, not manufactured in a laboratory by scientists. Here's a second common objection you'll hear. Well, just like antibiotics and cancer treatments, the science of IVF is a gift from God. So we should use it gratefully. We should receive it gratefully from God. What should you say to that? Well, it's true that IVF is a very impressive scientific and technological accomplishment. Conceiving a new child in a test tube and then implanting that embryo back into a woman's body would have been unthinkable even 50 years ago. That would have been science fiction. But we should be careful not to confuse scientific progress with morality. Just because something can be done through science doesn't mean we should do it or that it's a gift from God. After all, science has allowed us to make things like the atomic bomb or human-monkey hybrids. But we recognize those are not good things, even though science and technology allow it. So not everything science enables us to do is moral. Another example you might point to is human cloning. Now, we know this is scientifically possible, and it would have many advantages. For example, you could clone another version of yourself that is biologically identical so that if your organs failed, or let's say you lost an appendage or a part of your body, you could harvest it from your clone, and that would allow you to live a longer and healthier life. But most of us would agree that's completely immoral, that just because we can create human clones, and even if they might provide some benefits to us, it's still a wrong thing to do. The ends don't justify the means. Okay, here's a third big objection. What's wrong with a married couple using IVF to help them conceive? It's still the husband's sperm and the wife's egg that combine to make the child. Now, this can be a hard objection because it hones in on this special case. Many people object to IVF when it involves anonymous egg donors or anonymous sperm donors or surrogate mothers. But what about when IVF is just used by a loving married couple? The couple maybe is infertile, they desperately want kids, and they want to use the woman's own egg and the husband's own sperm to make a baby. The baby is born from love. So what's wrong with that? Well, the problem with IVF, as we've learned throughout this webinar, is not only from whom the child is conceived, but how. So to put it simply, the husband and wife should not conceive the child through a laboratory, but rather through sexual union. Remember, every child deserves to be conceived through an act of love between the child's mother and father. So that's why IVF is wrong, even for married couples. Even if you have a wife and a husband who love each other, who provide their own sperm and egg, that child is nevertheless conceived in a laboratory by a scientific technician, not through an act of love. Okay, here's a fourth and final objection. My son was conceived through IVF. Are you saying that you wish he didn't exist? Now, we addressed this a bit before, but just to recap, if we reject IVF, are we saying that children who are conceived through IVF are a mistake, or that such children are lesser than other children? Absolutely not. Children are always good. Every child is a gift who has the same infinite dignity, regardless of how they were conceived. However, as we said before, just because every child is good, it doesn't follow that every way children are conceived is good. For instance, as we hinted at earlier, some children are conceived through rape or through adultery or prostitution or incest. Now, if a woman becomes pregnant in any of those situations, those children are still good. They remain gifts from God, and it's still good that they exist. But at the same time, we can affirm that rape, adultery, prostitution, and incest are wrong because we're able to separate how someone was conceived from the goodness of their existence. So that's the distinction you want to emphasize when talking with an IVF parent. You might say something like, well, I'm definitely not saying that I wish your child didn't exist. That would be terrible. Your child is a gift from God. I'm glad he exists, and we should thank God for him. That said, we can still recognize that as great as your child is, it was wrong to use IVF to bring him into existence. IVF is wrong because all children deserve to be conceived through the loving union of their mother and father, not by scientists in a laboratory. Now, again, this has nothing to do with the goodness of your child existing here and now. What your child shows us is that God, thankfully, is able to take even our bad decisions and use them to create remarkable gifts. So we can praise God for that. Okay, listen, as we wrap up here, I want to conclude with some talking tips and strategies to keep in mind when talking about IVF. These are general tips and talking strategies you can use in any conversation. The first tip, and this is so important, always express compassion. This is critical. I found that many Catholics are eager to jump into explaining why IVF is wrong or announce better alternatives to IVF rather than first patiently and compassionately recognizing the pain that has led couples to pursue IVF in the first place. Excuse me. As we learned, infertility is usually the root cause of people pursuing IVF, and infertility is a heavy cross to bear. If you are infertile or if you have close loved ones who are, you know this. You know how sorrowful and difficult infertility can be. So before jumping into denunciations of IVF or proposing alternative solutions, you first want to express compassion. Remember that. Okay, here's a second tip. Emphasize that children are a gift, not a right. Now, this is the biggest paradigm shift that people need to make in their heads before understanding why IVF is not good. Children are wonderful. They're among the greatest gifts that God can give. However, nobody has a right to a child. Just because a child is wonderful, and just because we all, or most of us, have a deep desire to have a child, that still does not confer a right to have a child. We're not owed children. Children are gifts from God. They are human beings with infinite dignity, and nobody has a right to the life of any other human being. Here's a third strategy for your conversations. Explain how IVF kills several more children than it creates. Again, remember what I said earlier. In the IVF process, several embryos are created, usually a dozen or more. And then only some of those embryos are selected and implanted into the woman. Most of them are not even viable and end up dying. But then the embryos that were not selected are either discarded, they're killed, or they're stored indefinitely in a freezer. What this means is that for a couple to successfully have one child through IVF, up to a dozen other children are created and intentionally destroyed or left to die. This is a terrible moral outcome. I don't think most people who pursue IVF have even begun to grapple with this. Most of them are not really aware of this. Again, for every one child created through IVF, up to a dozen others are created and killed. So this fact alone, bracketing everything else we've said in this webinar, this fact alone should discourage more people from considering IVF. Okay, the final tip is to offer alternatives to IVF. Now, I want to add right away that you should only approach this with someone you know well, and you've discussed or you've discerned that it's clear the other person might be open to alternatives. Many people are just so committed to IVF, or they're in such a delicate mental state that proposing alternatives would just rattle them too much. And in those cases, you might have to exercise patience and just wait and pray for the right window to open up. Ask the Holy Spirit and He'll help. But once you sense an openness to their end, on their end to learning about other options, then you might say something like, "Hey, I'm just curious, have you explored any other options besides IVF? I know many people who have suffered infertility, but then who were eventually able to have children through other paths. In fact, some of them discovered that their infertility was a solvable problem. It was due to their lifestyle or diet or medications or other problems. Others found that their infertility problems were fixable through simple surgeries or even less invasive medical help. So have you looked into any of that, of identifying the root problem of why you're unable to have children and what can be done to address that so that you can bring children into the world through the natural way?"
This is only the beginning. Even though we're spinning out of control, this is only the beginning. Even though it feels just like the end, I know all the lights have gone out. Everything seems wrong now, but somehow beautiful. Once knew where we're going, I don't know. This is only the beginning, even though we're spinning out of control. dead is only the beginning, even though it feels just like the end. I know all the lights are gone now, everything seems wrong now, somehow beautiful. Deep beneath these waters is the world we once knew. Where we're going, I don't know. This will carry us to rest on mountain tops, and then we'll clearly see that it was worth it all. 'Cause this is only the beginning, even though it feels just like about to end, but our life has only started to begin. The thought will carry us to rest on mountain tops, and then we'll clearly see that it was worth it all. I know it seems like it's all about to end, but I love